This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2024, held at Ephrata Business Center in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, on March 1 and 2, 2024.
It's good to see friends in this group. I just saw Norwood walk in. Anyway, some of you know some of my story already, so I won't keep you long, but I think it's helpful I find it helpful when I'm listening to know just a little bit about the speaker's history, so I'll give that to you. I grew up in Kansas. At the age of 30, I moved to New York City to help start a school there, Followers of Jesus School in Brooklyn, New York. It was a small school. We floundered. I never felt successful there. For those of you who struggle with the size of your school, the largest our school ever was when I was there was in the 40s, I think. Maybe 50s, I can't remember. I tried doing things that I shouldn't have been trying to do. I got married while I was there. I should have tried that. But I never quite figured out how to go from being, well, I didn't say it like this, but being married to the school to being married to my wife. I always said I wasn't married to the school, but the reality of it was there were ways in which I was. And long story, but I didn't pace myself. I burned out, and we left after 9 years. We left after I was there. I'd been there 9 years. moved back to Kansas. Thought I was completely done with education. And then a number of years later, the Lord has really interesting ways of working. I hurt my back, so I got out of working in construction with my father. Took another job that I really did not like, but it seemed to be God kind of closed the other doors and this is the only one left, so here we go. I really did not like it, and I chafed under it and was not grateful for it. My attitude really wasn't that great, but it seems like maybe at least part of the reason that I was in that job was to get me ready for the next step. If I'd have been doing something that I really liked, I'm not sure I would have ever, I don't know what would have happened, but one summer the board had an emergency opening, or a late opening, to teach 7th and 8th grade and be the lead teacher at the grade school in our community. And Brent and I said, yeah, it sounds right, but we'll do it for 1 year, and then we're out. And that was in 2012. You can kind of guess the rest. They did actually create a new position for me. I'm also a pastor, minister at our local church, and I just didn't think I could do both. So they created a new position, part-time principal position, and found another homeroom teacher. It's been 8 years ago by now. The high school and the grade school campuses merged, and I took over the leadership of both schools under one roof. So I'm the principal there officially three-quarter time. I said that I don't want to be full-time. I can't just shoehorn ministerial responsibilities in on top of a full-time job. And so the board let me be three-quarter time at school, and that's basically been our life since then. I do teach a couple classes. I teach both economics and introduction to government, and I teach a PE class for boys twice a week, usually. Not always. This year I'm actually on sabbatical, which is part of why it worked for me to come here. It's been a good thing. If you've been in teaching or in the education thing for a while, I certainly encourage you to consider seriously taking a sabbatical. It can be a really helpful reset, I think. Those handouts, they're still coming around with new people coming in. Can you make sure they get up back up here, please? All right. Maybe they're still coming around in the back row. I'm not sure where they're at. They're coming that way? All right. Just make sure that they get back up here to some of these people who just came in. So that's basically my story. Our school is 100 plus. We're about, I think, 109 right now in 1st through 12th. We've been going through some transitions. In the elementary, it's worked out fairly well to have two grades per room for a long time. Now we've got these little spikes, and we're needing to figure out how to juggle that stuff. We went from an ACE high school to with it was a hybrid model with some conventional classes to all conventional now in the last 5 years or so, 7 years maybe. That's my story. I'm curious here, I should also mention one more detail because I'm going to be asking about this here. Soon after I started at Pilgrim, the board asked me to head up a curriculum review committee. And so they chose three others to help me, all with teaching experience, and just been, they've been great to work with. So it's in our court to figure out what it is that we want to see. Thanks, Linford, for that great primer on curriculum stuff. Figure out what we want to see, what it is that we're trying to accomplish, figure out what materials will best accomplish that, and then run that past the board. They still carry veto power, but they expect us to do the heavy lifting, the hard work of researching and figuring out what it is that works best in our system. So now I'm curious. I saw the hands of how many of you were board members or standing out there. How many of you were board members? How many are board members here now? Can I see that? All right. How many are either an administrator or a principal? All right. And how many of you are directly involved in curriculum choices? Okay. A good handful of you. All right. Usually we think of economics and civics as being a high school course. Have any of you done work with that in elementary? Really? I'd be interested in talking to you, Jillian, to see what you did with that. We do it as an upper-level high school course, do these as an upper-level high school course. How many of you currently have, let's start with civics, how many of you currently have civics and teach civics of some sort in your schools? Okay, Leon does?
We were in junior high, Pennsylvania.
Junior high.
But it's okay. Not a standalone course.
Okay, all right. How many of you do something with economics in your school? Interesting. Interesting. All right, so that gives me some sense of what we've got here. I would like to just talk a little more, just piggyback on what I said this morning with just a few more notes. I mentioned this morning that the goal of any teaching, discipling, is to effect a change. As it applies to our context, I'd like to point out kind of break that down two ways. The one way that we effect a change is to effect a change in the way we view something, view reality of in some form. And the other way is to effect a change in the way that our students respond to whatever, to the situations they're in, to what they encounter. Here's an example of the former. Why do we teach astronomy? Is it because we expect our students to become astronomers? Well, if they do, so be it. That's great. But that's not really why we teach astronomy, is it? We teach astronomy because it's a mind-boggling demonstration of the glory and the power of God. And we want that to be a part of the reality that our students understand, and we want praise just to bubble up out of them as they see that, as they do that. I think that the same could be said about a lot of the things in the natural sciences. It's great when there's application for them, but we don't have to have application for those things for it to be a very valid pursuit. One of the things that we've done in our school, if you're Winnie the Pooh fans, you'll recognize the term. We call them expoticians. We didn't want to call them nature walks because we don't always want to be walking, but we do want to get people out in nature. And one of our stated goals, that was in response to one of our stated goals in our science purpose statement, and that is that we want our students to become appreciators of God's creation. And now that appreciator in that sense, think about, have you heard of art appreciation or music appreciation? It's courses that you take to help kind of understand what you're looking at when you're seeing this painting on the wall, that kind of thing. Or when you're listening to music, here's what you're listening for. Well, that's what we're trying to do with this expletition. We talk about the different kinds of grasses or the forbs. We talk about the different kinds of the clouds, for example. We don't expect that to make a huge difference in the day-to-day life of our students in terms of, okay, so they'll mow this kind of grass and not, you know, whatever, nothing like that. It's to evoke the praise that God deserves in his glorious creation. Now, the second kind is how we respond or what we do with it. And that's more skills-based. And the obvious one there is reading. We expect our students to do something when we teach them to read. And they're going to be encountering reading all their life. And they need to be able to know how to decipher the messages that they see in print. Well, you're not going to be surprised to hear me say that I think economics and civics are in that latter category. I think that we need to be teaching economics and civics in a way that helps our students, gives our students the tools to respond to what they see. I'd like to use the illustration of farming as an example of why I think, and you're here, so probably that means that you're not, that I'm not needing to convince you that these things are important, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to use farming as an example of this. There are farmers who plant what they plant, make their farming choices based on what will make the most money at time of harvest. You know, cost of inputs or cost value of harvest minus cost of inputs, bottom line, okay, so I'll plant this. Well, there are plenty of people that have done that and are still doing that, but there are others who are learning from the old timers and are saying, no, there's more to it than that. There's more to the cost of a crop than what you're actually spending on it this year. And it's similar, soil health, I think, is similar to the health of a draft horse or the health of a tractor. If you don't care for it, it will quit being productive. And so I've got a friend who is doing regenerative ag, and he goes to multiple conferences a year to learn about, you know, I think, how much more can you learn about soil health? but he does. He keeps going to these conferences because he is trying to understand the stuff that's below the surface, trying to know how to interpret the data that he can get from his, whatever it is, from his crops and from the soil and whatever else, from the tests, probably, so that he can make choices that will increase the usefulness of the soil in the long term and make his farming more effective in the long term. And I think that's how we need to look at economics in particular, and also civics, is we need an understanding of this stuff to really function in that arena. I'm going to just probably step on some toes here. Walmart is no longer the biggest, scariest monster out there. There's Alpha, there's the Amazon thing and the Google thing and the Apple thing, whatever those are. They're the ones that we should be really concerned about. But let's look at Walmart as an example. I should have found my documentation for this, but I do think it's well documented. Walmart, when they move into town, of course they provide jobs. In the long run, for every job that Walmart provides, that community loses 1.6 jobs. Now, is that good for the economy? Is that good for the community? Walmart is providing all these cheap goods for us, aren't they? Which is it that we should be looking for? That's one, just one tiny little data point on this issue of economics that I think we've largely kind of buried our heads in the sand on. We look at the short term. We say, well, that's cheaper at Walmart than it is at the local grocer or the local whatever, and so we're going to go get it at Walmart. And have we really thought about the impact of shopping at Walmart? Well, in case you're wondering, my wife and I don't come out together on this one. She still shops at Walmart. I don't. But but it's these kinds of issues that I think we really need to look at. I also have quit shopping at Amazon for those very reasons. I don't know how deep to dig into some of this stuff, honestly. How important is it to think about how our clothes or shoes are sourced? How important is it to think about the working conditions in India or Bangladesh where these things come from? I think we're wrong in ignoring that. How many of you have read John Mark Comer's book, The Ruthless Elimination of Worry? Of Hurry.
What was the book?
Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. It's just one of others that talks about this. But he makes the case that we are living, we are actually complicit with modern day slavery in some of our purchasing things. We keep our hands clean because we don't really know what's happening over there, right? But by supporting that with our consuming of the goods that come over here, we are empowering some powerful entity over there to keep impoverished people under their thumb and working for subsistence wages. Now, I don't have answers for this stuff, but I think it's part of the economics education that we need to wrestle with. There are alternatives, and it's fascinating to be thinking about how some of those are working in places. I'll have a little bit more about that later. I'm going to spend a few minutes now talking about what we've done at our school, just as a model for how you could approach these two subjects. I'll say it here. I know it's still being recorded, but it's a smaller group. I'll say it. The economics text that I referred to this morning was Bob Jones. I don't know how many of you have exposure to that, but it is their approach is, in my mind, quite troubling. I don't think Abeka is any different. I was talking about economics, but I will say that we taught ACE, or we offered ACE government at our school for years and years, and that's no better. We looked, when we did our social studies review, we looked at the materials and we said there's no way we were going to ditch ACE, we knew that, but we knew there was no way that we were going to go with Abeka or Bob Jones. So what are our options? Secular materials? Well, actually, some of those are a little better off than these two, I think, in terms of being a little more neutral. Not quite as strident, maybe, but we still weren't finding anything that really fit our model, what we were envisioning. And the you can take the time to peruse these. You can see on the social studies statement, social studies philosophy statement and the purpose statement, you'll see what it was that we were aiming for, and I think you'll understand why these Abeka and Bob Jones materials were not going to cut it for us at all. And so you'd think we were teenagers, not recognizing the cost of something, but we decided we're going to figure out a way to make our own. And Norwood and all of you Christian Life people in here can you would have had reason to look at us and say, dream on. We still don't have a product that's publishable, but we do have something that's basically working for us. And if the projector was working, I would show you what we've done with the introduction to government. And by the way, just maybe this isn't a huge thing, but we do call it introduction to government for a specific reason. We are trying to get away from the narrower topic of civics to looking at government in general. We do focus, we have a unit that focuses on the U.S. Constitution, and of course, our fourth unit talks about where we'll interface with it more. Actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me just tell you what we did with that. I could show it to you on here. I will say this, our materials are not, very, very little bit have we written ourselves. It's mostly just borrowing articles, either online things or, primarily online sources. We don't have copyright permission for any of this stuff that we're using. That has to happen. We've taught it twice now, and we've got it. If we're going to keep using it, we need to get squared away with that. The main one that we're doing with that is probably one that we're not, or the main one that I'm concerned about on that front is probably one that we're not going to keep using. For one of our units, we're getting a Encyclopedia Britannica article, and that one is kind of college level reading, so we really need to replace that with one that we write that takes the same basic stuff and gets it to our level. All that to say, I do have, is it a half a dozen or a handful of people who have shown interest in this. I've given them access to our files. It's called Nextcloud. It's the equivalent of Google Drive, except we host it ourselves. If any of you have an interest in that, just send me an email address, and I will give you a login for this. You're welcome to go onto this shared folder and use whatever's there. And of course, if you improve things, we really appreciate if you contribute right back to that folder. I can track changes, so I can know that if somebody tweaked something, it'll show up and that kind of thing. But if you make major changes, it'd be nice to know. Especially, yes, sir.
What type of assignments are the students expected to participate in? Or?
Let me just. I'm almost getting ahead of myself here. I'm not sure which part to say first here, but I would have showed you what it looks like. But it looks roughly like a Google Drive layout. It's browser based, and our five units are in there with all the stuff that's in there. Let me just start by telling you the. Well, you can see it, actually. Sorry, I don't, we already have to go over this. Is there an extra copy here? yes, you see the five on the bottom of the introduction to government, the course outline there. Unit 1, Bible Survey, we simply take the time to look at all the scriptures that seem relevant to the issue of government. We're asking specifically the question, what is God's design for government? And if you haven't done so, I think your eyes will be opened when you go to the Old Testament and discover what God holds governments responsible for. There is a lot there in the prophets. Of course, there's the law, the Mosaic law, but in the prophets, the kind of judgments that the prophets aim at leaders of the people it's sobering. And you can imagine, maybe you can, I mean, I was a little shocked at how prominent it was, but it's still, it's not that hard to believe. An awful lot of what God holds governments responsible for is defense of the helpless. The little triad that typically comes up is the poor, the widow, and the alien. Are typical things that God says, you haven't been doing this and you are going to be judged for it. Or of course other things, but that's one of the things that comes out. So we spend a good part of the first, I forget, is it 2 weeks maybe, in the Bible survey. What does God expect from government? Then the second section is the Britannica article that I talked about. Too deep, too long. We need to get it rewritten. Haven't gotten that done yet. But the idea there is just to give a broader scope of government. And part of the reason on that, if you'll let me say this, is we want our students to understand that democracy is not all there is. democracy is actually fairly young, and it's even now it is not the only form of government. That's not to denigrate democracy. It's just to say that there are other ways of doing things. And I think our students probably aren't very well versed in some of those areas. So we spent some time in political science. Next is a read through the Constitution with a study guide. My sister Melody Nisley did some excellent work with a study guide for that. It's also a little dense, but it's doable. And then we spend time in state and local government. Obviously, state wouldn't apply to you if you're not in Kansas, but you can get ideas from that to go to your own. What we did for, and that include the court systems, by the way. And this is kind of where it gets more to the things that we might interface with. In fact, for state and local government, like state and county or state and city, we have them have our students take a department or an agency within the government, research it, come back with a 2 to 3 minute presentation. So we don't get cover nearly all of them, but they get a little bit of a deeper dive into one or two agencies, get some idea of what's happening there. This is about zoning, this is about tags, and this is about vehicle inspections, and those kinds of things. And then, of course, the meat of the course is Unit 5, being a Christian citizen. What does God expect of his followers living in our world? And how do we interact with that? So that's what we've done with Introduction to Government. Like I said before, it's unpolished, but it's kind of working for us. We make some improvements every time, and we'd be happy if other people could use it. The study guides and those kinds of things, there's no copy permission on any of that stuff. It's some of the articles. I'm thinking of any articles right now besides the Britannic article that actually has copyright issues. There may be some others. Ask me afterward or write it down now. My email address is Arlyn, A-R-L-Y-N, @pilgrimcs.org. A-R-L-Y-N, @pilgrimcs.org. If you just email me, I will set you up with an account to look at that. Let me just talk a little bit more now about what we've done with economics. Government was first, and we were kind of thinking we're on our way with that, and so we said, yeah, I think we need to do. We said we think we need to do that with economics as well. Well, my sister Melody and I were the ones that were primarily in charge of that, and I'm not sure what happened. Were we just busy, or what? But things just didn't quite come together for us with economics like it did with government, and I'm not sure exactly. We're still not sure exactly how to move forward, but in desperation, then we finally settled on the Bob Jones and said, "Look, this is probably the lesser of the evils here. Should we teach this and help the students spit out the bones?" We spit out so many bones there just wasn't much left. I shouldn't say that. They got the basic concepts, but one of my students one time in frustration said something like, "We're critiquing this thing so heavily. Why are we even using it?" So there is, I think it worked kind of, but it was almost counterproductive to use it. their logic, or especially their use of scripture, just was enough to make me sick in my stomach. My students saw it. These are 11th and 12th graders. I'd say, okay, well, let's take a look at the reference they're using in this case. Take a look at the scripture, look at the context, what do you think? And they just shook their heads. They couldn't believe multiple times. I'm not saying every time, but multiple times he looked at it and said, how did they come to that conclusion from that scripture? It's just, I said at the time, I hope these writers are better economists than they are students of the word. Because they certainly didn't strike me as being very good students of the word. I hope I can say that as respectfully as I can there. What I'd like to do is, what did I what I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about some of the books that we have looked at that I hope will be a way forward for us. It's also just, again, it's not a tidy solution, but it's what you do when you're desperate. We feel we've got to do something, and unfortunately, Christian Light and the others haven't produced something yet for us, so we're trying to find something that works. What I found as a starting point to kind of give us the building blocks is a DK book called Simply Economics. And it just does a really good job of giving just very simple, concise explanations about all the basic things about economics. Things that I dare say, if you don't know the majority of these kinds of terms in here and what they mean, it's barely fair to call it economics. And there is a lot that you can learn from Scripture, for example, from one of the other books, that doesn't dig into all this stuff. And so it feels to me like if we're going to call it an economics course, we've got to give them these terms and give them that basic framework of economic thought. And I, for example, I talked about rationality this morning. They do a better job of not being quite as narrow. Here's the rationality presentation, and then on the next page it says people aren't always rational. Now notice they're still having individuals at the center, but at least they're raising questions about the rationality theory. Does that make sense? So it's not a textbook, you know. It's anything but turnkey. But it will at least give us the terms. So that's what we're planning on using next time. What we'd love to do then is have somebody take one of these books, probably the book I referenced this morning, and just turn that into a high school textbook. That's what I'd love to see. But I mentioned this book. Actually, what is perhaps even, this one is a little too dense, Economics Today by Donald A. Hay. This is more a more direct answer to the economics systems that are being promoted today than even this, because they engage Economics Today by Donald Hay. It's not a fast read, but he does a very thorough and careful job at looking at Scripture and what God and evaluating our economic systems of thought in relation to that. So, if anybody's here ready to do a rewrite at a high school level on one of these books, talk to me. And of course, there's this classic by Timothy Keller, Generous Justice. Not in the same category, really, but still just a very good biblical foundation for looking at, you know, that scary word social justice that we almost don't dare use anymore because it just doesn't. You know, it's got too much baggage. He does a good job, I think, in kind of taking the baggage off of that. So there you have a kind of a skeleton of what we're doing with it. What I'd like to do to wrap up is just take the time. I know this is a big group, and so it's not going to be quite a round table. But what I'd like to do now is just take the time for you to talk about what you have done, or maybe some of the frustrations you've felt, and if you've tried something and it hasn't worked. If you want to give me some pushback or feedback of any kind on what I said this morning, it's yours. I hope this will pick it up. If not, I'll try to repeat what I have no way of knowing if it will or not. I'll try to watch the indicator here and see if it seems like it's picking up your comments, your questions. We've got just a few minutes, so dive in. Generous Justice, Timothy Keller. I've got a longer reading list if you're really wanting to just jump in. I actually had the privilege, one of my economics students last year wanted to do economics too. And so I just shoveled him the books. He did an amazing job. He wrote, he was an unusual student. But his homework was to write responses to this. And he did a really good job. I wish we had more students like him.
So civics and economics seems kind of dry, a lot of concepts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the solution there is to look at where is this playing on our world. Well, unfortunately, it's a lot of obscenity cases and stuff you don't really, that's difficult to bring up in classrooms. How do you get students to engage with the concepts without, oh, this is just kind of this boring high school course, or maybe that's not a problem for you?
It's a good question. One of the ways that we did that with government, or tried to, was at one point I had each of the students take a turn. Actually, it was probably more than one round, but they were supposed to find some current news item that related to civics or government and bring it to class and present it, offer their evaluation of the situation, that kind of thing. It wasn't always directly connected to the material we're covering right then, but it did kind of help make some connections. And of course, when we got to the last unit, that was where things got really interesting. There were some great lectures or videos, not always lectures, online. Dean Taylor Zach Johnson have some great videos that were just really, I think in some cases they were actually kind of turning points for students in my class. They were kind of a little skeptical, but that kind of clinched some things for them. Economics, well, our book gave us lots of opportunities for lively discussion because of some of the controversial things they were saying in the book. Second time around, if it's this book, which I'm pretty sure it will be, this is, I think, really kind of captivating. The way they make God's economic principles come to life and applicable. Not a very complete answer, but it's what we've done. Does anybody have some answers for him on that? What have you done to keep it from being this dry stuff that people fall asleep on?
I'm brand new on the board, but I can't point to you. I do know that there is a way to do practically within the classroom, teach economics through paying cash for your desk.
Oh, interesting.
And so there's higher demand locations, right? And so it drives the price up. And so there's practical ways of doing it. Talk to Steve often.
Okay. I will say another thing that we did that I wasn't sure about afterward, but one student said it made the difference for him in terms of the class having, he was about ready to drop the class before we did this, he said. we did a simulation, an economic simulation using the Settlers of Catan game to try to turn it into a more of a real life scenario. Settlers is not real life at all, but they wrestled as a class. We had, was it 9 students? I forget what it was. They wrestled as a class how to make this thing realistic. They all did their own version of it, and we brought it together and tried to combine what they had done. They learned a lot about economic realities in that process. They never came up with a game that worked very well, but they learned a lot about economic reality in the process. Monopoly is a lousy game. I'm not fond of it, but you know, it's got some. There is some reality there too if you get past the dice. Yes.
Amy. Yeah. My son is in an economics class in college, and he told me about a game they played with. Everybody got a set amount of paper currency, like made up stuff, and then they had to do a bidding thing. And he said it was great fun. And I could give you details on that maybe if you want to know more. But it really made it. It was a practical thing that they did to understand how supply and demand.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, how much people are willing to give.
We did a simulation of that too, separate from the game, of markets, and you know I'm drawing a blank on the term, where supply and demand, what's that point called? I can't even think of it now. Market equilibrium, I think is the term I'm looking for there. Some of those kinds of things that clicked for some of the students in ways that just, you know, looking at the graphs didn't make sense. So there are ways of doing some of that, but it sounds interesting. Yes.
I wonder if part of it is actually looking at some real issues.
Yes.
That I think with students often get really tired of pat answers and they're just stuff we stay away from.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes some courage to go into some of those things that are kind of potentially hot button.
Or, mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I think if you're willing to kind of take the risk and kind of step out, you're going to have more engagement because, it's pertinent. I mean, okay, so I have a classroom and just something as simple as, you know, a green economy.
Yeah.
Brings up a lot of feelings.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, or you were talking about, you know, sourcing different materials, where we should shop, where we shouldn't. And just having a real discussion about it, not just pat answers and accepting things, but maybe being willing to dive in a little deeper.
Well said. Well said. I have been encouraged when, I mean, I obviously feel very strongly about some of these things, but there are some things I have to be honest. I don't have concrete answers for these things. So I have to throw them out as questions without then after a while coming back and saying, now this is the final answer. And I have found them very receptive to that. That doesn't seem to diminish their respect. Like you said, I think it increases their engagement actually and their willingness to be thoughtful about it. Yes.
Yeah, I don't teach an economics class, but economics does come up. And one of the things I did in my classroom, I believe it was last year, was we had a discussion about the ethics of income.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of started just from my own comments. But I questioned the students, are all methods of income equally acceptable?
Exactly, yeah.
And I used the illustration of a car dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And would it be okay for us to have a used car dealership? Well, I didn't see any problem with that. I said, what about if I had a Chevy dealership and I'm selling Corvettes and Camaros, which would not be approved vehicles in our church group? Would that be okay? Well, then they weren't quite sure. I said, well, what about a Bugatti dealership? Well, that they were pretty sure. I was just, no, that's not for a Christian. I said, but why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just no point to a product that is, they're so expensive. I said, well, now let's take it another way. You can go to the pound and get a dog for $10.
And we were the rest of them.
That makes us squirm, doesn't it? Exactly. Exactly.
But I do think it is helpful for our students to think through these issues. Because what does a $2,500 bulldog do that a $25 dog from the pound doesn't?
Yeah. Exactly. Well said. We're over. Sorry. On my account, you can stay and talk, but probably it should continue at the round table tonight rather than delay anything else from this. But thank you very much for your attention. I'll be around here for the rest of the time. I'd be happy to engage on these issues more.